On this week's edition of New York Now, protests erupt across New York State after the death of George Floyd. Governor Cuomo responds.
There are necessary reforms that need to be made.
The state legislature is back in Albany next week with a package of bills on the issue. We'll have details from Josefa Velasquez, a reporter from the city, and analysis from Donna Lieberman with the New York Civil Liberties Union and Masara Makati from the Albany Times Union. And later, we'll dive into environmental issues with Senate Environmental Conservation Chair Todd Kaminsky and Jessani Mahar from the Nature Conservancy. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. New York and the United States erupted in protest this week after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. As you can see here, those protests stretched from Brooklyn to Buffalo. Most were peaceful, others turned violent and destructive. And while people are split on the tactics of some of the protesters, they've drawn a response from the state's leaders. Here's Governor Cuomo this week.
With the issue of the protesters, I share the outrage over not just Mr. Floyd's murder, but what it represents, one in a long string of criminal injustices. It is a metaphor for the systemic racism and injustice that we have seen. And I stand with the protesters in the point that we need meaningful reform. I also believe that change, although often necessary, is very hard to effectuate in society. I believe this is a moment for national change and national reform. And I think it can be a positive moment for this country, but it has to be done intelligently.
And now the legislature is planning a trip back to Albany to pass a package of bills in response. Joining me with details is Josefa Velasquez. She's a reporter with the nonprofit group, The City. Josefa, tell me what we're expecting from the legislature next week.
So the legislature is planning to come back on Monday to start taking up a package of bills dealing with criminal justice reforms, and more specifically, the repeal of 50A, which is a state law that shields police personnel records. And New York is one of the few states that has such a strict law in effect. I'm being told that the law will be repealed, not just reformed in the ways that some people have wanted it. And that will open up personnel records for not just police, but also firefighters and corrections officers to see whether they've done, have issues with excessive force or anything to that effect on their records.
So if you are repealing 50A, does that mean that people could get these records at any time, or would it only be when they're under investigation?
So that's a good question. I think we're still trying to figure out the details of that. I've heard that there's supposed to be bills introduced tomorrow, which is Friday, and we'll know more details on whether the public will have sort of carte blanche to be able to look at records for whoever, or whether they would have to be accused prior to of some sort of issue in order to get access to those records.
Right. This has been a huge issue among criminal justice advocates for the last few years with no traction on it so far. This might be the thing to carry it over the finish line. Josefa Velasquez from The City, a nonprofit news organization, thank you for bringing us some quick details here this week on New York Now.
Thank you.
Let's turn to some perspective now from inside those protests. Joining me is Masara Makati. She's a reporter from the Times Union who's been covering these protests all the past week, speaking to people in the Black community and other people at the protests. Masara, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Anytime. So tell me what it's been like inside these protests, because I feel like people watch them on TV, they hear about them on the radio, but they don't really understand what it is like for the most part to be actually in them and feel that energy. Tell me what you've experienced.
Emotion. I mean, if there's like one word that I would use to describe it, it's emotion. When you're going to, I've been to protests almost every single day this week, starting with last Saturday, and there's just this collective grief and pain from everyone in the community, not just the Black community, but especially the Black community, that just reverberates through the air when you're in these protests. And it's an outlet for so many people. You know, when you're walking with the protesters, when you're standing with the protesters and people take to the megaphone, it's so personal for them. This happened in Minneapolis. George Floyd died in Minneapolis, but there are George Floyds in every city. And so you're walking with the protesters, you're talking to them, and you're hearing the names of Elazar Williams and Dante Ivey and Andrew Kearse being invoked by so many people. They have their own experiences with police brutality. Their friends and family have their own experiences with police brutality. And this week of protests was just this outpouring of frustration and grief and pain for years and generations of systemic racism and having these experiences with discrimination. It just, that grief hung in the air.
To me, it feels like this situation is different than the other unarmed black men that we've seen killed by police in the past, I don't know, 10 years. Do we know why, when you talk to people at these protests, why is there this new energy? Or at least it's perceived that way for me. It may not be that way for others.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a group of younger black people today and brought that up with them. And Ferguson was what ignited the Black Lives Matter movement, right? And then you just heard everything silenced after a while. Some people theorize that it's because activists were muzzled. They weren't given the opportunity anymore to speak out. That energy, of course, is renewed now, like you said. I don't know if people think the movement itself is different from a few years ago, but I know they think that the results are different. I mean, you're seeing the police officers in Minneapolis actually getting charged and arrested, and you did not see that a few years ago. And so that's something that people have been bringing up, is that this time there's more of this momentum to mobilize. And for some reason now, maybe it's the current political environment, we're not entirely sure, but for some reason now, officials are taking more of a step to hold the people accountable for the violence that they have committed against members of the black community.
All right, Masara Makati from the Albany Times Union, thank you so much for your insights. Really appreciated here on New York Now.
Thanks so much, Dan.
So earlier this week, President Trump said that he would consider sending the military to some cities where these protests have escalated, like New York City. And while there's a limit to free speech, some say there's also a limit to how the government can respond. I spoke about that and more with Donna Lieberman. She's the executive director of the New York Civil Liberties Union. Donna Lieberman from the New York Civil Liberties Union, thank you so much for joining us here on New York Now with your perspective this week. I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad to be able to talk to you. Thanks.
So Donna, let's start with what your group does, and I think it's pretty obvious. It's the New York chapter of the ACLU. Your entire job is to fight for the rights and the constitutional liberties that people have in this country. So let's talk about the news of the week, which is the protests that we've seen in cities everywhere across the state and around the country. Specifically, I want to start with a warning from the president, because I think that it set off some civil liberties alarms from some people. He said that if governors and mayors don't essentially diffuse these protests and every situation, basically, that he will maybe send in the army to diffuse it for them. Donna, what are the implications of that? Because for me, it seems like that may not even be legal, but of course, I don't know. And you're an attorney, so what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, he has no right to send in the army. Let's remember, this is the guy who, you know, was elected, you know, on the claim of getting rid of big government and draining the swamp. You know, he is absolutely the opposite of that. He is an authoritarian. I'll watch my words. His threats simply perpetrate division and fear and hate. And I just hope we make it through despite this man and the people around him. He doesn't do this alone, from Mitch McConnell on down, up and around.
Can I ask you about the protests? Because that's, I don't want to say the other side of this, but it's kind of the other side of the conversation here, where we have these peaceful protests during the day and they turn chaotic at night and at some point. And from a civil liberties perspective, obviously you have the right to protest. We have First Amendment rights in this country. But is there a line when these protests go from being something that's protected under the Constitution to something that is prosecutable, something that is criminal, I guess? Where is that line?
Yeah. So I think it's important that we recognize that the right to protest is fundamental. And we can never treat it as if it's not fundamental to our democracy. And you have the right to engage in peaceful protest. The tradition of civil disobedience is deeply ingrained in the civil rights history of our nation. It is important. And you know, when people engage in looting and violence, which I believe pales by comparison to the police abuse and violence that we have seen in recent days and in the events that led up to the protest today, I think we have to understand the rage that is and the pain that is boiling up within the Black community and within many in the white communities and other communities of color as well. So repealing 50A in New York is something that's a no-brainer. It's got to happen yesterday. The legislature's in session. They have to stop diddling with you know, around the details. They have to make sure that it happens and it happens effectively so that there's transparency. And that's just a step. It's not the end of the line, you know.
So on repealing 50A, there's this question of, and I don't know if it's actually a question, but the police unions say they don't want 50A repealed because they fear that people may target their officers and that their addresses and identifying information may be revealed. And I know—
Baloney. Nobody wants the private information of police officers, you know, and that's redacted, redactable. You know, nobody's looking for that. What we want is the disciplinary records. We don't want their medical records. We don't want their days off. We want their disciplinary records. When they've been accused of wrongdoing, found to have engaged in wrongdoing, we want to know it. Romarley Graham's mom, Connie Neat, has a right to know what's being done to hold the guy who killed her son in his grandmother's bathroom accountable.
So the legislature's in session next week. It's something that we're going to be watching because they very well may repeal 50A next week when they're back in Albany. Until then, Donna Lieberman from the New York Civil Liberties Union, thank you so much for joining us here on New York Now this week.
Thanks for having me.
In the backdrop of all of this, of course, is the COVID-19 crisis. And while that's on the decline in New York, the fiscal implications of the disease are still very much real. That could affect the state's environmental goals down the line, but Senate Environmental Conservation Chair Todd Kominsky says he's optimistic. He joined me this week over Skype. State Senator Todd Kominsky, the chair of the Senate Environmental Conservation Committee, thank you so much for joining us here on New York Now this week. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
So, Senator, I feel like what we're facing in the state right now in terms of the state's finances is something that we can't ignore in any part of the state, any part of spending. And with COVID-19, the governor's projecting a $13 billion budget deficit over the next year. He's saying without federal aid, he might have to cut spending on things like schools, local governments, and hospitals. But of course, those cuts may not be limited to those areas. When you're looking at the state's environmental goals, obviously they require spending, they require money. Are you worried that some of the state's environmental objectives might be on the chopping block right now, given the dire financial situation that the state is in?
You know, Dan, what we need is the exact opposite. We really need to double down on our commitment to green energy, and I think that could be a real boost for the economy. I mean, if I got to be in the White House right now, and I got to either be the president or tell the president one thing, I would say, you know, we have, I would actually like to tell him a lot of things, especially about the state of the country. But if I was asked to do one thing about the environment and the economy and the connection there, it's that, you know, we can marry a big time infrastructure program with a big time green jobs program and just investing in green, you know, projects generally. And they're just not doing it. You know, for example, the Bureau of, BOEM, the Bureau of Ocean Management, could be putting out more lease areas off the state of New York to develop more wind energy. Believe me, the demand is there. There are companies that are falling all over each other to be in our area, which, by the way, the wind industry calls our area the Saudi Arabia of wind because of the wind currents that go through the New York metropolitan area.
I hope
they don't
mean
it from a human rights perspective. Yeah, they don't mean it from a human rights perspective, but just from an energy intensive perspective. There's so much our federal government could do right now, and we really need their help. And not only in a, hey, send New York money sense, which believe me, we need that, but also in a, look, let's have a Marshall Plan from Washington that invests in green jobs, moves our country forward where it needs to be, gets people in electric vehicles, you know, refreshes old grid systems, and make smart investments that will pay off down the road. That could totally happen. The answer is not cutting. The answer is doubling down. And we did a lot with the CLCPA last year to state our commitments. We need a national commitment of that same magnitude to match this moment.
Let's talk about the Environmental Protection Fund, which, for our viewers that don't know, is a fund that the legislature and the governor commits money to every year to deal with environmental and conservation issues. Historically, that fund, and I don't mean in recent history, but maybe before the governor's time and before you were in the Senate, was taken
there,
from...
There was a time before Governor Cuomo?
I know, it's hard to believe now. These past 9 years have been very long. But that money has been taken from that fund and put into the general fund at times when the state is facing some economic distress. And with these cuts that we're facing as a result of not getting money from Washington, according to the governor, are you concerned that the EPF might be used as a piggy bank? And what can we do to push back on that?
Look, these are all awful choices we'll be faced with. I mean, you know, if you're a school district, you can make a very good argument that you should be the last to be cut. The same if you're a hospital, the same if you're trying to preserve, the Adirondacks, or if you're trying to preserve endangered species. I mean, there are no good answers. So we have to keep pushing Washington to do the right thing. But we want to be in an economically stable situation such that the Bond Act is permitted to be on the ballot in November. It's really important, and especially for climate change, it could be used to fund billions of dollars, not all of it for any one purpose, but whether it's for flood resiliency, which is going to be really important going forward. And by the way, you could do a lot of great economic infrastructure creation that is resiliency related. You know, if you want to build the seawall now, you create a lot of jobs and prevent billions of dollars of damage when that storm comes, right? I mean, that's a generic example. Or if you raise that railroad substation and if you harden that grid, you could do a lot. But you could do a lot on climate change too. And a lot of the money in the Bond Act is dedicated and earmarked for that. So there's a lot we could do. We want to be in a state where we don't have so much debt that we cannot put that on the ballot. And that decision will be made in the next few months. We want to have the Bond Act on the ballot. We want to vigorously advocate for it. We want it to pass. That's a huge amount of money to help prime this green economy that we're speaking of and to help preserve our, really beautiful nature that we have here, that we have to get back to where it was and preserve what we have that we appreciate. And I think the Bond Act's a great way to do that. And I'm really proud that we were able to get that in the budget this year.
So you're talking about the Restore Mother Nature Bond Act, which is $3 billion that the state would essentially borrow for these projects. With the state facing this deficit and people finding less money in their pockets right now, how do you convince voters that you go to the polls and you see something on the ballot that says, we want the state to borrow $3 billion, and a voter that is facing tough times right now may feel, why am I going to let the state borrow money to do this? How do you get the narrative across that it's not money that's coming out of their pockets, it's money, an investment in the future?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of advocacy we're going to have to do with not-for-profit groups, and we'll have to be the missionaries out there speaking to the public about it. I do think that these things pay for themselves many times over. You know, if we're able to preserve streams and lakes and our oceans now, we will save a lot of money on dealing with the ramifications later. But I think people think these are worthy investments. They want to preserve a planet for their children and for future generations. And they know that in order to, you know, kind of prime the pump in a lot of these areas, you need money to get it started and that it takes money to maintain them. You know, we did not get a real session due to the pandemic where many bills that would normally be taken up were taken up. We did not get to have a regular Earth Day package like we normally would. And everyone understands why. We were dealing with an emergency right in front of us. We're dealing with a different type of emergency this week. And we will be dealing with the pandemic for some time. But there's too many important environmental measures, frankly, that impact the least advantaged among us, whether it's dumping that occurs in neighborhoods, whether it's chemicals that poison water, whether it is a whole bunch of other measures to advance a climate change resistance agenda. There's a lot we have to do, and I hope whether it's the summer or the fall, that we stick to that, we come back and we work hard on that agenda because New Yorkers deserve it and their future generations deserve it too.
And it's something that we're definitely keeping an eye on. Todd Kaminsky, the chair of the Senate Environmental Conservation Committee, thank you so much for coming on New York Now this week. We really appreciate your perspective on this.
Thanks a lot.
Many environmental advocates fear that if voters don't approve the Bond Act, the state's environmental goals could take a hit. I spoke about that and more with Jess Otney Mahar from the Nature Conservancy. Jess Otney Mahar from the Nature Conservancy, thanks so much for joining us here on New York Now with your perspective this week.
Thanks for having me.
So Jess, in November, voters will go to the polls and they will vote on the Mother Nature Bond Act, the Restore Mother Nature Bond Act. It's a $3 billion pot of money that voters will have to approve for the state to borrow to combat climate change. At the same time, as a lot of our viewers know and a lot of voters know, the state is currently facing a $13 billion deficit over the next year, $61 billion over the next 4 years. Is this the right time to be borrowing $3 billion to combat climate change? It seems like it might not win the appeal of voters right now.
That's a great question. I think that our financial situation will really depend on what happens in Washington, first and foremost. But second, what we know is that New Yorkers are concerned about the issues that come along with climate change and environmental degradation, just as they're concerned about this pandemic. And one thing that Governor Cuomo has pointed out that's so important is that as we build back from the economic and public health crisis that we're currently facing, we really need to build back the society and the state that we want for our kids and grandkids. So this investment in the environment will not only create jobs, which we all need right now, but it will also make sure that we are fixing serious issues that threaten the health and safety of New Yorkers across the state. So it's a really smart investment to be making at this time.
Can you explain for context what the $3 billion would be used for? The broad description by the governor this year was to protect or to combat climate change. But what specific initiatives are we looking for? Where would that money go?
That's a great question. So this money can go into communities all across the state. And there are four categories of funding that it can be used for. The first, as you said, is climate change. And reducing pollution that causes climate change is done by investing in things like buildings and facilities to make them more energy efficient and to site more renewable energy. But it's also done by urban forestry, planting trees in our cities and making sure that they're there to sequester, hold carbon, and also reduce polluted water runoff. The Bond Act will also fund open space conservation and recreational infrastructure. And boy, have New Yorkers been counting on this during this pandemic. So building more parks and trails so that we can get out into nature. It'll also help preserve farmland, which a report just came out from American Farmland Trust about a week ago, talking about how New York's farms are at risk. And with everyone worried about healthy food right now, that's really important. The third way it'll help New York is by protecting clean water. And we know that we need more investment in making sure our drinking water is clean. It'll also help with issues that we're seeing all across the state, like these harmful algal blooms that are closing down our beaches and bays, which are, again, places where people want to go for safe outdoor recreation right now. And finally, it'll make communities safer from the impacts of climate change. All across the state, we've been facing serious issues like flooding, and we need to make sure that our communities are prepared to deal with a future that will have more water. So we want to make sure things like our roads where they cross streams are upgraded so that they don't flood and, you know, blow out during hurricanes. That happened a lot up in the Adirondacks during Hurricanes Irene and Lee. And we want to make sure that people living in areas where sea level rise is threatening them have a place to go or have natural areas that can soak up that water before it gets to them.
Let's turn to something called the Environmental Protection Fund, which is, for our viewers, kind of a pot of money approved by the governor and legislature every year to fund environmental and conservation projects. This fund has historically been kind of taken from by the legislature and the governor during budget negotiations to fund other things. And right now, with the state facing such a huge deficit and the governor already warning that cuts might be coming, are you worried that this Environmental Protection Fund might be on the chopping block?
We saw this during the recession. The Environmental Protection Fund was slashed basically in half. And we're hoping that now there's a recognition as we put this fund back that we will benefit by continuing those investments even during a crisis.
Right. It's definitely an area that we are watching. Jess Otney Mahar from the Nature Conservancy, thank you so much for being here in New York Now. Always appreciate your perspective.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have more coverage on our website every day at nynow.org. And don't forget to follow us on social media at nynow_PBS. Until then, I'm Dan Clark. Thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.